Our path to autonomy is long and winding.
3-4 years' time, what that might feel like.
Are there issues? Are there risks? Are there opportunities?
How can we be thinking about how to leverage AI to really amplify human capabilities?
What a loaded question.
How much data are we talking about at the moment?
How much can we put on the car that allows us to have good enough?
What do you think are the toughest bottlenecks right now that can get solved by technology outside of the vehicle?
It's going to be probably a surprising answer.
Welcome to Interconnected. Today, we're diving into the emerging world of autonomy. From driverless taxis in Phoenix to autonomous fleets in Shenzhen, every self-driving mile depends on low-latency networks, local compute, and continuous model retraining. As autonomous technologies rapidly advance, we want to explore where they stand today and how the underlying infrastructure will support their future.
And to help answer that, we're joined by Dr. Brian Reamer and Petrina Steele. Brian is a research scientist at the MIT Center for Transportation and Logistics and the MIT Age Lab. You've got a focus on automation, driver behavior, and the future of mobility. He's founded two academic and industry partnerships in the automotive space, and he's the author of the forthcoming book titled How to Make AI Useful, Moving Beyond the Hype to Real Progress in Business, Society, and Life.
And Petrina is Equinix's global lead for emerging technologies. Most recently, she was the global lead for autonomous vehicles and connected tech, where she was responsible for shaping Equinix's connected autonomous vehicles and smart transport strategy. Brian and Petrina, it's a real pleasure to have you join us. Brian, what has you most juiced about this autonomous vehicle space? And what have you been working on lately that's got you excited?
So look, there's really two topics that really have me excited these days. First of all, it's the increasing array of automation-enabled technologies in our vehicle. Technologies that really can assist us as we wait for what could be a few decades for automation to really support us more ubiquitously. At the same time, I've been thinking a lot more around the context of AI in particular. How can we be thinking about how to leverage AI to really amplify human capabilities, to make us humans better?
So, Petrina, you're coming at it from a completely different angle. What has you excited about the EV and the autonomous vehicle space?
Yeah, I guess we come at it slightly different angles, but probably in a similar view. I think from my perspective, we sort of 5 years ago started to look at what was happening within the sort of connected autonomous vehicle community and industry. And I think what's really exciting about 5 years on is actually seeing some of that technology actually now applied into vehicles and actually being able to sit in sort of cars and experience what it feels like to have assisted driving. But I think more interestingly in that is seeing the customer sort of perspective around that. So the adoption of it and how they're feeling about it, and how in some cases they say that they would never want to not have it now after having had it. Whereas if you think back to the conversations I was having 5 years ago, when we're just coming into this space, a lot of people were saying there's no way we would want this at any level of autonomy. We all want to drive our vehicles. So I think very much to what Brian is saying is that it's funny how, you know, so quickly some of this technology has moved forward. It's been integrated, and also the public perception has shifted somewhat. So if you imagine what the future might hold in another 3-4 years' time, as we move closer to level 5 autonomy, what that might feel like is going to be really exciting.
But Trina, maybe over those 5 years, you will have seen some people come and go as players in the market. Who are you seeing as the current players shaping the market now, and how do they differentiate themselves?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. So when we first looked at the market, it was everyone attacking the market. So everyone was investing in the space, and not only the traditional OEMs, but you had new disruptors coming into the market. Obviously, you know, Tesla at that time was a relatively new logo. Obviously, they're more established now. I think what's really interesting is to see, A, the different strategies that each one of these are implementing now. So some of them might have started with, we're going to invest, we're going to build this capability ourselves and run it in-house. And some of them have evolved to say, actually, we're clearly not going to be able to fund that, or we're going to be a late adopter and watch what the market does. And some of them have moved towards partnerships. It's just an ever-moving target that we're watching at the moment.
I think the key here is that over the last decade or so, we've come to a market reality that our path to autonomy is long and winding. While we see organizations like Waymo being highly successful with robo-taxis, and we feel that they're growing, in reality, the real meat of the growth is there in assistive driving, where the market is demanding convenience, and hopefully that convenience comes with safety. With all of these systems, what we are doing is bolting together some advanced level of sensing.
What have you found about how this technology is actually working together to provide that driving assistance level or the autonomous outputs?
Simon, that's a good question. And I mean, there's been this fight over cameras alone are enough versus we need other sensing modalities. And I think the answer is a very simple question. How safe is safe enough? And today, I think most but not all would agree that we cannot provide a level of high enough redundancy and safety using camera-based systems alone. So this comes down to the fundamentals of sensing. This information is all then pushed into a high-performance computing platform on the vehicle with digital connectivity to the cloud, storing mapping information, taking up information to retrain the system. And there is no question that an enormous amount of processing of data is happening on the vehicle. We look at our cars today still as physical devices, but they are incredibly complex technologies and computational systems on wheels.
How much of the operation of the vehicle relies on compute that's outside of the vehicle?
Most of the time, you cannot really rely on any compute outside the vehicle for mission-critical, moment-to-moment driving applications. So the car needs to make a decision. Do I need to brake? Do I need to turn? Should I be asking the driver for input? Where the compute begins to move to the cloud is where we want to use the information we are collecting to retrain the system. So what the art of self-driving or highly automated driving or assistive driving is today is to find those little nuggets of information that we haven't seen so many cases of before, edge cases. Pump those up to the cloud and begin to retrain my system using cloud-level computational capabilities to discern those situations, update the maps, and enhance the system.
Yeah, I think also one of the really difficult challenges is that anything on the vehicle then sort of adds weight. It adds problems to that. So you're actually then changing the design and the flow dynamics of a vehicle. There's so much complexity in the sort of understanding of not just what do we put on the car, how much compute goes on that car, but then these cars become more and more expensive. The more sort of edge compute you put on. So there is this kind of real balance around how much can we put on the car that allows us to have good enough versus let's go full and then realize that we're changing everything about the vehicle in itself. So when we come then further to things like V2X architectures, so vehicle to everything infrastructure, it becomes even more complicated.
Yeah, actually, Petrina, on that note, Brian's talking about sending this stuff up to the cloud from the car. Last I checked, there were no fiber connections from each car up to the cloud. What do you see? Are there issues? Are there risks? Are there opportunities in that cloud to car connectivity? And what happens in the middle? Is there a place for, like, is there any physical stuff going on?
For me, when you watch the subscribers, not only for the connected vehicle applications, that's one thing, right? So you're seeing that kind of exponentially grow for the amount of applications and sort of bespoke customization that customers are demanding. And that requires lots and lots of connectivity. And then you're seeing the separate side, which is the AI, autonomy, hardware in the loop simulations. So there are two very distinct views when you're approaching this. One is around the how do we build connectivity to the vehicles and perhaps look at smaller models that are already trained and what does that infrastructure look like? And then the second one is around the kind of monolithic, very large training clusters that we see. And both of those have different data ingest challenges. So when we're thinking about things like safety, vulnerable road users and things like that, that requires the ability to communicate not only within the vehicle and vehicle to vehicle, but you're also looking at, well, pedestrians and cloud and traffic. And that sort of leads us into this multi-access edge ability. So this ability to aggregate as much of the connectivity and the data from the different platforms and build this sort of edge environment as close as possible to the applications, to the users, etc., that allows them to have best, I would say, latency between all of those different platforms. And that can't sit on the vehicle. And so the ability to be able to build an architecture to support that is really important.
So one more question in this megatrends section that we do. Brian, when you look globally, what are some of the most advanced autonomy use cases that we're seeing now? Obviously, we talk about autonomous personal vehicles, but the autonomous vehicle industry is quite a bit larger than that. Would you say that the commercial EV space is the most advanced, or do you see other cases that have advanced beyond that to a full, closer to full autonomy?
I think the mining industry is actually among the more advanced out there.
My perception of the success of autonomous vehicles in mining is because it's a very controlled environment. You know, they own the environment. There's no random people coming out from behind school buses and everything like that. So from an infrastructure point of view, they're able to set it up in the best way possible to capture that data at the edge and get it uploaded to the cloud and train and retrain. How are you seeing the evolution of this data loop in real-world autonomous vehicles at the moment?
Simon, I think you pick up on one of the arts of automation is controlling as much as possible as what we call the ODD or the operational design domain, the design in which you're engineering the automation. The simpler that design domain, the easier the automation problem is. So, if we were trying to automate a small city like Chandler, Arizona, it's a lot easier than trying to automate the entire state of Arizona, let alone the Western Seaboard, multiple cities, et cetera. So mining, as you mentioned, is controlling that ODD as best as they can. We even see the city-by-city philosophy of Waymo trying to control that to some degree and limit things. But the expansion of the ODD brings enormous complexities.
Yeah, Brian, that brings me to the next question, because you're bringing up technologies outside of the car that will support autonomous vehicles of all types, not just cars, but trucks. Obviously, there's a big market there. So, Petrina, we'll go to you first on this. What do you think are the toughest bottlenecks right now that can get solved by technology outside or digital infrastructure outside of the vehicle? What needs to happen outside of the vehicle to bring about the best possible outcomes? I mean, even if we don't get fully to level 5, what has to happen outside of the car to make that work, both from data transmission capabilities, actual telemetry from the environment? What do you believe has to happen?
I think it's there's quite a few things, right? So I think Brian was touching on that sort of how much can you control on the ODD? And I think that's one big element, right? So as we sort of move out, what in the realm can we control is a really important sort of look at where's the next step. So anything like maybe an airport or a campus or a smart city. I think what's really interesting for me is the countries that have moved very quickly forward are very highly supported by government, right? We mentioned China as one of the market leaders. I'd also like to say the Middle East. People are invested in, number one, ubiquitous connectivity, right? There's lots and lots of new infrastructure around the ubiquitous connectivity. Regulatory frameworks are in place to push those forward. But I'd also say infrastructure is there. So if you look at these areas, a lot of the infrastructure is new, right? Imagine trying to retrofit infrastructure and road layouts. It's not conducive. So I think anything where there is sort of new, easy infrastructure, when I say easy, as in it's been laid out in a way that makes it more controllable, smart motorways, etc. So I think there's an element of surrounding infrastructure, ubiquitous connectivity, and regulatory view on that. I would also say one of the other things is around open systems, right? Sharing of data. So swarm intelligence is a big thing that people talk about around how do we aggregate all of the data and make it open for others to use. And when that, you know, gets to that point, then we have more intelligent systems. So I think there's a lot of different pieces around that need to really come together in order to kind of move the ball forward collectively.
So, Petrina, maybe how much data are we talking about at the moment for these connected cars to transmit, you know, from the vehicle to some offboard infrastructure? How does that data go upon its journey, like going up to the cloud, continuous learning, updating the models, and then distributing those learnings back to the vehicle? How does that all work?
It's two things, right? So it's that first connected vehicle that kind of streaming data that's always there that we've been talking a lot about. And then I think there's this sort of view around, I think it's quoted around 4 to 10 terabits per hour of driving of data that's generated. And you think about that volume of data that's generated, the understanding is that data somehow has to get to the cloud, right? And it can't all be transferred over APIs. And so what has to be created is either from a training model perspective, the ability to ingest that data very quickly. So what we see historically and also what's evolved over time is customers from a test car data perspective trying to actually bring those memory disks and put them directly into a data center. So everyone assumes that data, you know, data lives in these clouds somewhere, but the physical manifestation of them are data centers around the world. And so the ability to ingest those either into their own proprietary infrastructure or into a cloud edge infrastructure is what's important. So they actually physically bring those disks in or they courier those disks, and then they either put them into their own infrastructure that they have, or they put those into an ingest location with one of the hyperscalers. And so we've now seen, you know, since we had it as a concept, 4 or 5 years ago with initial market leaders on how do we kind of help this process, because that process for being able to do the training sometimes can take so much time, not because of the technology, but because those disks need to be transferred by mail or, you know, shipping to be able to get into the systems. And so the fascination with being able to get that quicker has now leapt multiple folds forward. So we now have what we call ingest stations for these hyperscalers, right? So we recently announced one in Munich with AWS. And so you can understand that's very popular with any companies that are doing very big simulations within the cloud. They want to be able to move that data very quickly. So that in itself, it's sort of the, you've got to understand what is it that you're streaming and how can we improve those architectures by building out your infrastructure to be able to have distributed data and allow that ingest towards the cloud and towards your various platforms that you have, but also on the training side to be able to do that and get that data very quickly into your big systems to do that. So again, it depends on which, and they both look, they're sort of overlap, but they're separate currently.
Let's look forward 5-10 years. Which is nearly impossible. We get it. But as autonomy becomes a little bit more part of people's daily lives, right? I'd love to hear what you guys think it's going to look like. So Brian, let's start with you. What becomes invisible and just works, right? And also, what kind of digital infrastructure investments around the world would be required to get to that reality?
You know, in the same sense where AI is going to manage your inbox if it's not already, automation AI technologies are going to make us better decision makers on a moment-to-moment basis so that you are attuned to what you need to be doing more effectively. You know, until we solve the latency issues, we have some significant limitations. So the data center side, the big picture compute is going to continue to evolve, but we need to invest in the infrastructure to distribute and connect us to that and do so faster so that we can begin to rely on the automation and the AI that sits around us.
Hmm. Well, Petrina, why don't you take over where Brian left off, because I think you're in that world.
So I envisage a world whereby an AI agent will look at my agenda and then plan things for me and make my life easier, but also for someone to help the environment around me, right? That's where I'm most excited, is to get that seamless integration between different systems that would then work together. But again, it's about the element of how do we connect up all of this digital infrastructure, right? How do we ensure that there is better ubiquitous connectivity? There is more investment around better access to different platforms. I think that's where we'll start to see a lot of rollout over the next 5 to 10 years. It's already happening, right? Not only some of the big investments that we see around very large national AI infrastructures, but all of the investments around subsea, all of the investments coming in around data to data center, fiber, hollow core fiber, all of these investments are sort of layering on top of each other to enable us to get to the point of autonomy, should we want to have it.
Thanks to our guests for joining us today to help us explore the growing landscape of autonomous innovation and how it's rapidly changing how the world moves.
And stay tuned for the next episode of Interconnected, where we will look at another technology megatrend and how it intersects with digital infrastructure. You can find all our episodes on our Interconnected YouTube page and wherever you find your podcasts.